He preached it with only an Indian. He said, the day will come when the holy name will be heard in every town and village of the world. But during his appearance, he preached only in India. Now it's all over the world. There's no question of dying out. It's like the sun. The sun rises in the east and then goes west. Now the benediction of Lord Chaitanya is going to the west and all over.
And this will go on for how long?
So this can go on for 10,000 years, and then Kali Yuga gets so demoniac that the Hare Krishna movement cannot be applied. Not that it will die, it never dies. After, it'll just be not manifest as a world movement. The devotees will become very few. But then after the end of Kali Yuga, Lord Chaitanya's movement means Krishna Loka, so it's always going on, but in this planet after 10,000 years. But we're concerned with now. We're alive. We want to go back to Godhead, or we want to preach in this lifetime. But now the opportunity is very good. The world is bad, but still, this very method is still very effective. You see here, chanting, distributing prasadam. We shouldn't think that there's something dying out. Right now, it's certainly not occurring. Our ISKCON movement is a branch of Lord Chaitanya's tree that started 500 years ago. And this branch is very young, very vigorous. It's just beginning to spread out and multiply branches. There's no question of dying. It's very vigorous. I may be dying, you may be dying. This movement is full of life. We were just publishing an interview with Prabhupada where some man was saying, why is God unjust? Because we see there's suffering in the world, so it's very difficult to understand how God can be just, how he can be good. So it's that same idea from one's own limited and misunderstood position. He's thinking something about God or about the Lord Chaitanya's movement. So Prabhupada said, no, it is you who are not good. There's no question of God not being good. But there's suffering in the world because you're not good. You're not a living being. But God's position, that this has to be understood. That there's suffering because of disobedience to him. Whoever is suffering the result of something that he did. Even the devotee sometimes has to suffer, and he takes it as some result of his activities. We were explaining last night that at the time of initiation, karma is taken away by the spiritual master. So karma means that for the things that I've done, I should be punished birth after birth in so many ways. We read that when you kill a cow, you have to take as many births as there are hairs on the body of that cow to suffer that. So that's karma. So the spiritual master takes away the karma. But it doesn't mean that you still may receive some suffering, which is called a token. In other words, the karma, the judgment is that I should be hanged. But the judgment I get, the punishment I get, is to have a pinprick. So that's not karma. So the karma is taken away. The devotee, he may suffer. That's the speech of the karma. But that is not that God is not good. If he says, you're not good. In the same way, if we think, where is Lord Chaitanya's movement, vitality, it means that there's some blindness in the person has. His movement is manifest. It may be small, a few thousand persons, But that's always so. Even when Krishna was present, there were only a few hundred people who knew him to be the personality of Godhead. But just these few thousand people, they're all over the world. Here in Hawaii, ISKCON devotees, 40 or so, 50, whatever. Some boy on the plane was telling me, oh, the Hare Krishna is everywhere. They're very, very active. They're always giving out prasadam every day in a different park. They're chanting, they're distributing books. These people are really active. But they usually don't know. Sometimes they guess, how many men do we have? Oh, what do you have, 10 million?
Yeah.
So it may be not as big as the Communist Party or something, but it's not dying.
Srila Prabhupada always gave that example about the man opens a jewelry store and that not so many people will come. That for something very cheap, everyone will buy.
One takes initiation, one takes vow, follow the principle. You see so many disciples have taken vows and so they can fall away.
Same thing, they're not good. They're insincere. Spiritual master is good. Krishna is good. They've taken a vow. But they're not good. But such people cause havoc. But it doesn't mean the spiritual master will stop. Prabhupada was criticized for taking Westerners as disciples. He said, every sannyasi in India has criticized me. For he accepts women as disciples, he has performed marriages and awarded Brahman and sannyas to people who for 20 years or so were mlechas. So in the Lord Chaitanya's movement, because it's not dying, those who say like that, they're not doing anything. It's not dying, but one of the risks taken by the spiritual master in the line of Lord Chaitanya is to accept disciples who sometimes are not fit. And that's Srila Prabhupada explained that in that talk in the book, Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers, that this is his misdeed. Technically speaking, it is a misdeed. He's not supposed to take so many disciples. And Jiva Goswami has given that as an injunction. So that may be to protect. But we have to spread the movement so that it's not dying. But I say that whoever... Why bring it up? It shouldn't have any effect on someone who's considering initiation to look around and see that there are bad examples. It's like a young man, he may see so many derelicts around, and then should he think, well, I shouldn't pursue a career because look, there's so many derelicts. No, they're derelicts, but I'm going to become successful. They have nothing to do with me. Rather, they spur me on. I won't become like that. What is the cause of becoming like that? I must not do it, whatever it is. It in no way means that there's something wrong with the process. It just means that these people are insincere. The process is not difficult. Srila Prabhupada said that from the very beginning. It's not at all difficult. It's that people are not sincere. Crazy. But we have to just say, well, you're a guide, so I'm crazy or I'm fallen, but I want to be saved, so you please instruct me and I follow those instructions.
What is meant by this statement that says that the spiritual master knows perfectly how to engage the disciples in this experience? How does that work?
Well, persons have different physiological nature. And so the spiritual master, he can engage them according to that and according to what is best for their advancement, regardless of what they may think their psychophysiological nature is. So it means like that. And so he, in our ISKCON, we have so many engagements. There's book distribution, there's cooking, there's editing, there's deity worship. So he's supposed to know the mentality of his disciple and engage him like that. This comes by reciprocal dealings between the guru and disciple.
Well, it's better that one not take initiation if he's not sure, right? You know, because you don't want to break a vow.
Right.
Because then you become so much more degrading. You know, I mean, you're already degrading if you don't take a vow. But, you know, to take a vow and then...
If you can follow the four... If you can promise... That's why we say insincere. This is a gentleman's promise. If I say to you, lend me $5, I'll return it next week. And then you come and I say, oh, well, I don't have it. I don't think I'll give it back or come back next year. So I'm just a rascal, not a gentleman.
Yeah.
So it's like this. It's not a mystery whether I should take any initiation. Will I give up illicit sex? Will I give up intoxication? Will I give up gambling? Will I give up meat eating? Will I chant 16 rounds? And follow the instructions of my spiritual master. You're not asking that something extraordinary beyond that. Then if I can say yes, and if I have faith in the spiritual master and Krishna, then I should take initiation. Question. As I've seen Srila Prabhupada deal in terms of our movement and the needs of our movement and the needs of disciples, it's always an individual thing. But one is very fortunate if he can feel that he is doing a service that has been fixed by his spiritual master. That's the perfection. To know that he's pleasing the spiritual master, not to think, oh, this is wonderful. I was trained for 18 years as a computer expert, and now I've got an engagement in devotional service where I can engage my computing skill. This is my perfection. It may be. But the perfection is whether that's pleasing to the spiritual master and to Krishna. It may be after all that schooling as computing, he asked me to go and preach among the natives in Africa. It was nothing to do with computing. So somehow, if we can be taking up a lifelong engagement, is that Prabhu Datta Desh, the land where the spiritual master gives you to preach, like Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, he gave Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami Vrindavan. You stay here, you write books. He told Nityananda, go to Bengal and preach. It's called the Prabhu Datta Desh, the land where they're supposed to preach Krishna consciousness. Either like that or some engagement. But those devotees who have that, who feel that their life is dedicated to a place or an engagement, they're very fortunate. Rather than always trying to figure out, I wonder whether this would be pleasing, I wonder whether that would be pleasing, perhaps because one didn't want to surrender to a direct order from the spiritual master as to what he should do. But as I've seen it, it's a combination of the desires and the propensity of the devotee and the independent order of the spiritual master. Once I remember one boy asked Prabhupada, he was in part of the Bombay project, so there were different things to do there, as well as possibility of preaching other places. So he, He asked Prabhupada, now I'm here, what do you want me to do? Or I think Prabhupada first asked him, so what do you want to do here? But then the boy said, well, what do you want to do, Prabhupada? And Srila Prabhupada said, no, I'm asking you, what do you want to do? So, the spiritual master is like a parent, so the parent also wants to know what will be pleasing, what kind of service is making the disciple happy, because we have to be happy and enthusiastic. So if someone naturally takes up some activity and then tells the spiritual master, I've been doing this and I find it very wonderful, I'm very happy serving the deity or doing this or doing that, so naturally the spiritual master will, if it's a bona fide service, encourage him. But sometimes he has very definite plans for certain persons, which seem to be simply Krishna's arrangement.
Really him that's engaging, it's actually Krishna?
Oh yes, always. He's there, but he's just an instrument of his spiritual master. The spiritual master always thinks of himself in terms of his previous spiritual master. But always Krishna's desire is being enacted. Yes, so he's just like he doesn't sometimes the disciple's service is being rendered very personally to the spiritual master, especially in the terms of a servant or a secretary. So he doesn't think that I am engaging this person in my service. In the case of any disciple, but he's engaging them in Krishna's service. And since in all his activities he's via media to Krishna, then you can say that actually he's thinking that I'm just engaging them in Krishna's service, but on the order of my spiritual master.
Which spiritual master do you think of, Krishna or Chaitanya?
Well, they're the same, Krishna. We're coming from Lord Chaitanya, the Sankirtan activities. But you can't so much separate them. Lord Chaitanya was always preaching about Krishna in Vrindavan. Not preaching. He was preaching to chant the name of Krishna. But he was speaking amongst his associates about Krishna. So if you think about Lord Chaitanya, then you can't separate it from thinking about Krishna in Krishna Loka. You think about the spiritual master, everything is packed up together. Just like if we preach to someone or lecture, after some time we've spoken about Lord Chaitanya, and then we speak about how he's teaching the Bhagavad Gita, and then we say, but you have to receive it from the spiritual master. So they all must be there. He thinks of them all. All the Vaishnavas, all the Sampradaya. But especially his spiritual master. We have heard Srila Prabhupada's motivation was like that. He never said that, why have you come here? Is that he doesn't say, Krishna has sent me. I was in Vrindavan and I thought, one day that Krishna appeared and he said, you go and preach to the West, and when you get there, distribute, print books in this way. No, he says that I met my spiritual master and he told me to go to the West. And one day, he recalls, he was at Radhakund and his spiritual master said that in the future, this Gaudiya Math, there will be fire in the temples because they will not be acting as my pure servants. So I'm very disappointed to think of this. So you should, if you ever get money, publish books, print books. So these were his directions and his inner motivation.
Gaudiya mass, can you explain that?
Well, that's a long struggle, how they split up after the disappearance of the spiritual master. Somebody, the Guru Maharaj, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, just as Prabhupada indicated in his last days how he wanted things to go on, so he said also, he said they should form a governing body of 12 persons. But then after his disappearance, different parties started saying that actually their person that they were behind, he should be the acharya. There should be a single acharya to replace Bhakti Siddhanta. But he never said that. So each one of them, then they tried to make the legal claims for ownership of the temples, but there was no direction from the spiritual master. So it became all material, and factions developed, and the preaching stopped. So we have to be very careful to follow whatever plan Prabhupada has chalked out for the future. It'll be our success if we can continue as this ISKCON party. That was his desire. He didn't just spread the teachings that everyone in their home should chant Hare Krishna, but he wanted a movement, just like the British took over India and the communists were so powerful. He wanted an ISKCON movement to actually influence in the world. That takes a movement. So he created not just the dissemination of teachings, but call it an institution or a spiritual movement. So that has to be run in an organized way, but in a spiritual way. I know that discussion often came up here in Hawaii. I was with him once, 1974. Somebody, a guest came to the temple in hippie mentality, and he asked like that the spiritual life, is it compatible with this idea of everything being so organized in an institution? And Prabhupada knew his mind, and he became very firm and angry and said, yes, we must be extremely organized, he said. We must be very organized. What we're trying to do, we're trying to look at how organized this is, all these hotels, all these businesses. So we had to be very organized if we're going to make some effect in the world. Like you're saying, is this movement dying out? It's not dying out. We're growing, and some people are becoming alarmed, but it's growing strong. He has such big plans, and we can only, it's not one man's work. All of our work together, cooperation. I have to go back.
The Guru Puja starts at 20 after 6.
So you should go back.
So where is Prabhupada now, then, as far as?
He's with Krishna. He was with Krishna when he was here, and he was Krishna now. And he's with us, he's with the devotees. If he's not with us on this walk, then we'd be lost. You were saying how you saw Prabhupada and how
I'll be walking right along here.
How much? By the seeing. But that's a fact, I know myself. Seeing Prabhupada or getting his glance. It's a very special emotion. But at least according to the philosophy, the sound is more important than the seeing. There's a saying that a sadhu is not seen, he's heard. Although we can see him, his real essence is heard. So the seeing is now gone, but the hearing is still present. Just like Krishna, he taught 5,000 years ago, to have seen Krishna meant you went back to Godhead. The seeing was so effective. But now that seeing, like that, for the ordinary persons, is gone. But the hearing, called Bhagavad Gita, that's still here. And still one can go back to Godhead by that hearing.
Maharaj, how does a disciple approach the spiritual master for initiation?
With humility. Just like Arjuna, Parapanya Dosho, Pahatasvabhava, Pichami, Kamdwama, Samuda Cheta, Yakshayakshanishchitan, Buhitanme, Shishashteham, Sarumam, Tvam Papanam. Now I am feeling weak due to loss of composure, a weakness. And I don't know what my duty is. So I'm approaching you. Please tell me what to do. Now I am a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he approached. He was already trained up by his father, but his father says, you need to be initiated, to be linked, in this, and I cannot do it, it's not customary for the father. So, even having been so trained up and such a great scholar, he had to be initiated by a guru in disciplic succession. So his father recommended Gorkishore, and he went to him, and Gorkishore said, I cannot accept you as a disciple, you're a great scholar. I can't even sign my name. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati went back to his father, said he wouldn't accept me. He said, you have to be accepted by a spiritual master, go back again. Somehow he was refused again. Then one time he met Gorkishore, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, if you don't accept me for initiation, I'll throw myself off the bridge, commit suicide. Gorkishore was not planning to take any disciples, so he said, all right, I'll accept you. Some example in that story we can understand. Aham Brahmasmi, I'm not this body. Vyasadeva, Narada, they're not Indians, they're not Hindus. And this dress, this is spiritual, transcendental, from the Vedic, original Vedic culture, from the spiritual planet. We see the descriptions of Krishna. He's wearing clothing like dhoti, like yellow, lightning. They're dressed like this. Now, if in India this is the regular dress, that's because still this Vedic culture is persisting there. Therefore, India is very nice for Krishna consciousness. Just like when you go to Vrindavan, see like these people approaching us in Vrindavan, we don't find anyone jogging, but they maybe have a, carrying milk, or carrying something in an ox cart, and when they see devotees, they'll chant, Jai Radhe, Hari Bol, Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada used to get so much pleasure out of that. When we went to Vrindavan with Srila Prabhupada, we expected he would be like a tour guide and show us, this is the place where Krishna had the rasa dance, this is the tree where this. Srila Prabhupada never conducted any kind of tour like that with the devotees. He was mostly interested in
are establishing our own temple there. And he would always comment on the corruption of Vrindavan. But the one thing, among others, but the one thing I remember that pleased and impressed him so much about Vrindavan was when he would walk on the road, now it's called Bhaktivedanta Swami Marg, that road, and these ordinary people would pass him, rickshaw driver or something, and they would say like that, Jai Radhe. And he would say, this is Vrindavan. That even the common man, he chants like this, the name of Radharani and Krishna. So by understanding a little bit Prabhupada's mentality, we could understand that this is the transcendental secret of Vrindavan still, that the even ordinary man will chant.